Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So, hey, Sarah, welcome back to the States.
Why, thank you. It's good to be home.
I bet. You feel any better?
I feel like, well, I'm in my environment. I'm back on my treadmill desk, which I've really missed. But I got a cold. Like, it was one of those, I clearly caught it in Canada, but I started feeling sick, like, on the airplane on the way home. And, like, as the day went on, I was, like, getting sicker and sicker and sicker. So I apologize for my froggy voice. It's just one of those things. Like, I'm not getting enough sleep to fight a cold off very efficiently. So I actually, it's been a while since I've had one, actually. So I yay me, or yay not being exposed to germs or whatever it was. But so I'm home, but I have a cold.
I'm feeling super awesome. My kids, unlike last week, I came home and they were so super cute and in a good mood, and I can just tell that they had been like the perfect specimens all day. Do you ever have those experiences with your kids where you're just like, what side of the bed did you wake up on today, and can it be every day? Like,
yes, yeah. Very, very rarely.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Finn has been making me salads with his love. Have you seen this on Instagram?
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that on Instagram. That was so sweet.
Yeah. So we snuggled when I got home and I told him how his love made me get really strong at the gym, and it was really awesome and special that he made me salad. And, you know, we had like moment together, and then we all had a lovely dinner, and Matt installed a pull-up bar in one of our door frames. I got it for him for Christmas, and we hadn't figured out where in the world to install it or how to install it, which is just silly because that's like 8 months. But finally, I went around and scoped out door frames and was like, hey, this one would work really well. And he actually put it up today. So the kids and I hung on the pull-up bar and, you know, goofed around and had a good time. But I think mostly they're just enjoying spending time with me because I was gone this weekend. I had an awesome weekend up in Pittsburgh. I went up with Amy for Haley's bridal shower. And
oh, cool.
Was the most stunning, classy, beautiful event, like, I think I've ever been to, let alone, like, a bridal shower. It was crazy.
That totally doesn't surprise me. It's Haley.
Well, I know, but Haley didn't do, I mean, now granted, it's her family, and they know what her vision and her taste is, but, like, they had made all of the food from her recipe books. It was the most respectful, loving thing I've ever seen displayed from a family. Like, they're not paleo. So the fact that they went out of their way, not just to like cater an event in, you know, some sort of paleo friendly place, which probably wouldn't have been perfectly paleo anyway, like they home cooked their own catered party with the recipes from, you know, like Gather and Make It Paleo and whatever. And they served them in these little, like, plastic martini cups and, like, General Tso's chicken in little martini cups.
Cute.
So cute. Bacon-wrapped shrimp. And then they had, like, a parfait dessert in little baby mason jars. It was just amazing. And the thing was, is I'm really not a kitschy person at all. Amy and I were talking, and we're actually polar opposites because she loves kitsch and I don't. Like, I do not like doing the little, like, toilet paper games and all that kind of stuff. So when they called us in for a game, I was like, oh, Lord, I should just stay outside. It's not going to be my scene. But they had created a newlywed game with Bill where they had asked questions and pre-recorded his answers and then had Haley say, okay, now what's Bill gonna say? And they gave her a gift card, which I'm sure they would have given her anyway, for answering a requisite number correct. And of course, like, she answered all of them correct because they're a match perfect for one another. But
yeah, totally.
Yeah, if you don't know who I'm talking about, first of all, I don't know how you don't know who I'm talking about. Bill and Haley from Primal Palette. Almost everybody I know is like, what? They're not married yet? Exactly. They're so adoring and supportive of one another, and seeing their family come together and create this perfect event, I was like, oh, this isn't just a wedding. Like, this is a marriage, and they're doing it the right way, and they're respecting it and treating the process with such class and respect. And I was happy to be part of it. And I also got to work out in Pork Belly Fitness, which I don't know if you know what that is, but
I don't, but it sounds awesome.
It does, right? Bill and Haley coined their garage gym, Pork Belly Fitness, and Bill designed this epic banner that's, like, hanging in their garage called Pork Belly Fitness, and they have t-shirts, and I've been sporting that t-shirt for, like, over a year, even before we were writing Beyond Bacon. Like, I've loved pigs, obviously, who doesn't? And, like, the slogan is Bacon and Barbells.
That's so awesome. And, you know, an excellent segue for my question for you.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have to take advantage of the fact that you're, like, my resident expert in all things pork belly.
That's pretty sad if I No, so, I guess it's fair. I should be a resident expert. Sure. Hit me.
Hey, you send me questions about
absolutely
adrenal fatigue.
It's true.
So I can
totally
ask you about
leverage
pork belly.
You should. If you can't, then nobody can.
Exactly. Okay. So my awesome farmer, he's that I buy my half pig from, he's actually like a vegetable farmer, and these are his backyard pigs. He said, hey, I have a 9-pound pork belly. You'll want it. I mean, I had to buy it, but yes, I said, I want your 9-pound pork belly.
Because who doesn't?
Exactly. So then I bring this thing home. It's like monster, and like 9 pounds of pork belly is like a lot of pork belly. And I go, I'm going to make bacon with this. And I pull out Beyond Bacon, and then I went, oh, right, I don't have a smoker. Can I just do like a salt and sugar cure and have bacon at the end, or do I have to smoke it?
It's not going to be smoked, so it wouldn't have the taste of bacon. But why wouldn't you want to make a smoker from the instructions in Beyond Bacon about how to make a homemade smoker?
Laziness.
So what I would recommend is, if you were going to do something that big, is to actually do the Cracklin' Pork Belly recipe in Beyond Bacon. It's like a braised recipe. And frankly, it's just as good as bacon. For me, I wouldn't cure it if I wasn't going to smoke it, because it's just delicious on its own. Like, you can braise it and have a crispy skin and a fall apart, delicious, tender belly. That's what I would recommend. And it helps with the bigger piece. Like, if you're going to cure it, you're going to have to cut it into smaller pieces. My recommendation would be to cut it into smaller pieces.
Yeah, it's got skin on it, so I'm going to have to cut off the skin before I do anything with it anyway. So not that that's a problem to me. I was just excited to see that it had skin on it compared to the fact that it was pork belly.
Yeah, the Cracklin's recipe in our book, I know you've had them. And
yeah.
You can,
and I'm going to
the
make
skin
them. Yeah, that was, I was like equally as excited about that as I was about making my own bacon. All right, well, maybe when my book goes to the printer, I'll make myself a smoker.
Yeah. Mickey did a video on, Mickey Trescott from Autoimmune Paleo. Part of her review for us was she made her own smoker from the directions in the book and posted a video of it. It's pretty cool.
Oh, well, I should totally find that. Okay. Yeah. Oh, if Mickey can do it. That does not mean I can do it. Mickey's like, she's pretty skilled in the kitchen. She knows what she's doing. But all right, it'll be a challenge for like a month from now.
Cool.
So, what are we talking about today?
Well, we mentioned last week that we had a backlog of questions piling up, and I wasn't underestimating with like the number of questions that we have. And so just public service announcement, we feel really badly that we can't get to everyone's questions, but we hope that you understand that we are human beings and we do our best, and that we're going to do some questions and answers today, and they're going to be reflective of a general topic and questions that we get frequently. And if you've submitted a question relative to the topic and you don't hear it today, don't get your feelings hurt, but hopefully we answer your question nonetheless. So with that said, Sarah and I were talking earlier and we were like, oh my gosh, what should we choose? Because when you have so many options, it's hard to choose sometimes. And we polled the Paleo Parents Facebook page, and the resounding popular answer was people wanting to hear about preparing for school and thinking through holidays and just kind of, you know, tips and tricks to get them through tough times is how I would think about it, right? Like, how do you prepare yourself for the onslaught of school starting and children being picky and having to pack lunches and all and that
kind of a practical, like, how do we actually do this type?
Yeah. So that's the topic. You guys picked it. If you don't like the topic, then be more active on social media and speak up, because this was the winner. And then next week, we mentioned it before, we are going to have a best of show that I hope everybody enjoys, because even if you've listened to all the shows, you're going to want to listen to the best moments again. I mean, who doesn't want to relive them? And if you haven't listened to every single episode, hopefully it will expose you to some things that you might not have listened to yet, and you'll want to go back and enjoy those podcast episodes. So happy almost year anniversary.
Almost a year. Well, I actually think this topic is really fitting for us because school lunches was our very, very first podcast topic. So I kind of thought when that won the poll, I was like, that's kind of a cool way to celebrate our almost
one-year
podcasting anniversary.
It's timely, right? It's a year ago. It's the same time of year. People are thinking about the same thing. So,
well, my daughter starts school on Wednesday. We actually had like meet the teacher this morning, and I actually like brought in the box of Lair bars and, you know, talked about her being gluten intolerant, and if there were any, you know, birthday parties or anything, this was what to give her. And the teacher actually asked me, like, is she gonna be happy with that? Like, she was kind of looking at like Lair bars, right? Like, there's all the other kids are eating cupcakes and your daughter's gonna be eating a Lair bar. Is that gonna work? I said, oh yeah. She's like, she's gonna be super excited that she gets to have a Lair bar. Like, don't, like, she's like, do I have to let you know in advance? No, like, just pull it out whenever it happens. Like, she'll be excited, she'll be happy, it'll be great. The teacher just looked at me and was like, oh, thank you so much. She said, that makes it so much easier for me. And I was like, yeah, like, it's, you know, she's really good. And so she had the little question of, so is she packing lunches? Yep, her lunch is always packed. And, you know, so no sharing food. That's right, no sharing food. Does she know? Yeah, she's actually my daughter's a little bit paranoid about gluten. So she's like, well, not paranoid isn't quite the word, but she's like overcautious. So if she doesn't know, that's like, if somebody's offering her food, it's their first question every time. Does that have gluten in it? And so, so that the teacher was like, so relieved that, you know, there was this kid with an allergy in her class, but it wasn't going to make more work for her. And I think that was like the biggest thing was, you know, that it was, you know, something that I'd already thought through for her. So it was kind of cool compared to last year, which was sort of my first experience with, you know, diet restrictions in school. And I felt like I was sort of making it up as I go along. This time it was just like, this worked last year. Here, let's do this. It was great.
Well, I think that goes to the topic that I feel like we've recently talked about in the philosophy show about, oh no, I remember what it was. I was listening to my podcast with Jonathan Baylor of Science of Slim. I don't know why I just got our podcast mixed up.
Because his podcasts are awesome.
Yeah, and I was just listening to myself talk, which I have to listen to all the time. I don't know why, but I always listen to the podcast even after they're published because I'm just paranoid. I don't know. So anyway, I was on the podcast with Jonathan Baylor. I was talking about the importance of empowering your children, that you know, his question to me was like, well, how do you get your kids to live this lifestyle? How do you trust them? How do you know what they're going to do when they leave the house? I'm like, I don't, I can't control that. But my son's almost 8 years old. And at this point I've taught him that, you know, he makes his own choices. He's his own person. When he's out in the world, if he eats that cupcake, it's his body. Like, I can't change that. I can't undo that. But he knows that if he eats it, he's not going to be able to sit in class. He's going to have a stomach ache. He's going to have a lot of the body control issues that we talk about. And to him, it's just not worth it. And therefore, he's perfectly happy to make a different choice almost 99% of the time, that he would rather, you know, choose to eat a caveman cookie, is what we do, instead of Lara bars in the classroom. So I just think in you and I, you know, we try to remind people that this isn't something that's going to happen overnight either. That it's not like we just told our kids one day, okay, this is what we're doing and this is your new life and this is how you need to be, and it just happened. You know, you and I have been doing this for years. Our kids have seen themselves transform just as we as adults have seen ourselves transform. They've learned these things, and we've all learned how to adapt our lives. And so if we give advice, or, you know, I think from the perspective of someone that's newer, they might hear that your daughter is happy with a Lara bar instead of a cupcake and be like, well, my kid would never do that. And that might be the case, that your kid might not be there yet. But if you're diligent and you take this transition that we talk about and you pace yourself and you have patience and you trust and empower your children to make the right choice because you've educated them and you set a good example, that's the best, in my opinion, that you can do as a parent. And in most cases, I've seen that this goes positive. Even with children with sensory processing disorder and these sort of things, there are tips and tricks that you can use. And Sarah and I have both blogged about it, to kind of have this successful relationship to do some of the practical things that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, certainly initially, like birthday parties and stuff like that, I really had to go out of my way to make something that suited my kids' palates at the time. Like, you know, it's been a long road to get them to the point where something like a Lara bar is a really, really sweet treat. And we call that junk food. Like, if my daughter loses her junk food privilege for the day because of, you know, whatever thing that she did that would make her lose a privilege, and that's what she's losing. She's losing Lara bars. Like, it's and it's usually a complete travesty. Like, we get drama if that happens. And so that wasn't overnight. I mean, I took about 6 months to transition them slowly, like first getting rid of gluten and then getting rid of other grains and then getting rid of dairy. I mean, for us, legumes were a big part of our diets anyways, so that was kind of an easy switch. And because I was already paleo, when I switched the family, I'd already sort of switched cooking fats and stuff like that. But, you know, it was a long road, and we took it in baby steps. And so there was definitely frustrating times. but yeah, it's kind of cool to be on the other side.
Cool. So do you have science for the first time in almost a month?
Yeah, I have to say, I was feeling really guilty for not doing science with Sarah over the last few weeks. Even though there's like lots of science like dropped into those shows, because that's kind of what I do. But I really felt, I hear so often like people just love science with Sarah. So I decided we'd better do it this week, or else who knows what would happen. There would be a revolt.
The war might implode without your science. No, I do feel like we gave legit science the last few weeks, especially considering we were talking about philosophy. So to be able to, at one point, Monica was QAing one of the show notes, I forget what it was, and she texted me and she was like, holy moly, Sarah is really dropping the smarts on this one. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so Science with Sarah then. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So today for Science with Sarah, I thought it would actually be kind of a neat idea to go back a little bit to one of the sort of scientific rationale, like basic principles of a paleo diet, because I haven't done one of these for a while for Science with Sarah. And what I wanted to talk about today was saponins. Saponins are a chemical that have detergent-like properties. And so that means that there's something that can make oil and water mix. And they are naturally found in all plants. Now, this is where you often hear sort of a paleo sound bites. We shouldn't eat legumes because they contain saponins. We shouldn't eat pseudograins like quinoa because they contain saponins. And you'll hear that often, just like lectins are a broad class of proteins, and there are some lectins which are absolutely harmless. There are some lectins that your body produces and uses that are normal glycogens in your body, and it's just this subclass of lectins that are a problem. The same is true with saponins. There is a subset of saponins, which happen to be the subset that are found in legumes and in vegetables from the nightshade family. And they can be really big triggers of gut problems for people. And the way that they work is because they have this structure that allows oil and water to mix, they actually are also have the ability to interact really strongly with cholesterol. Now, people are sort of familiar with cholesterol because of, you know, taking measurements of cholesterol to assess cardiovascular disease risk. Cholesterol is actually a normal part of every cell's membrane, and it's actually inserted into what's called the lipid bilayer of every single cell membrane. And so what saponin does is it grabs those cholesterols and it kind of forces them to sort of do this kind of clumping, and what ends up happening is they kind of do this little change in their geometry, and they group together and they form a pore that goes straight through the cell membrane. Now, when you think about, oh, you're creating a hole in a cell membrane, that sounds really bad, but it's really, really important to emphasize that some saponins may actually be necessary for us to absorb minerals. They may actually have a really normal function in aiding our digestion. So when they form these pores in the cells that line the gut, that may actually be, in many cases, a necessity for digestion, for the absorption of nutrition from our food. What happens is that these sort of good saponins, we'll call them for lack of a more technical term, the pores that they make are small, and they very likely fall apart fairly easily. So they're transients. They sort of come and go. They get formed along the way, along digestion. The saponins that tend to be more problematic for human health are the ones that form either larger pores or more stable pores. And that's because it really changes the dynamics of the cell membrane, and that affects the cell's ability to do stuff. So if you have this big pore in the cell, it does a few things. It actually changes the cell's ability to transport carbohydrates. And it also, a big hole is going to allow things to leak in or leak out of the cell that shouldn't. And so there are some saponins that have been studied in sort of, you know, isolated cells in the lab that clearly kill cells. Those are the saponins. The ones that are like really, really toxic are the ones that are in poisons. Like those aren't in foods that we eat. So what happens with legumes and with nightshades is kind of weird in between. And there are probably some people who are more sensitive to them than others. I mean, there's other reasons not to eat legumes, which we've talked about. But this is one of the key reasons for not eating nightshades for people who have autoimmune disease or have leaky gut issues or inflammation. So saponins form these pores, and we know that certain saponins, the best actually studied ones, are the class of saponins called glycoalkaloids that are in nightshade plants, potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, sweet and hot peppers, spices derived from hot peppers. Those saponins are actually the best studied. And one of the things, the properties that they have, is they're very, very good at getting into the bloodstream. They probably get into the bloodstream based on this ability to form pores in the cells that line the gut. Although whether or not that's a like direct track still hasn't been studied. It's a very difficult study to actually be able to devise. So we know that saponins are very, very good at getting into the bloodstream, especially glycoalkaloids. And we also know that they are very, very good at stimulating the immune system. They act as adjuvants. And we've talked about adjuvants before because we've talked about these sort of in the context of autoimmune protocol for some of those shows. Adjuvants are chemicals that stimulate the immune system. And specifically what they do is they stimulate the immune system to produce antibodies. And so adjuvants are actually added to vaccines, and this is where people sort of heard about them. They're added to vaccines because the virus or bacteria, it's usually a virus in a vaccine, that's in a vaccine is either dead or has been, you know, somehow rendered inactive. So that virus cannot reproduce, it can't infect your cells, it's just virus that floats around when you've been vaccinated, and the immune response against that little bit of virus that's in a vaccine, if you didn't have the adjuvant, that immune response would not be enough to give you immunity against that virus. What the adjuvant does is it sort of ramps up and exaggerates that immune response so that you develop immunity against that vaccine. That is a, you know, powerful strategy for vaccinating against, you know, really serious illnesses. It's not so good in food. So the question I kind of wanted to get at, besides explaining sort of exactly what saponins are all saponins bad? And the answer is no. All plants contain saponins. And if we wanted to go on a saponin-free diet, that would mean that we were only eating meat. And that's like clearly not not the point. The point is to avoid the saponins that really can cause problems. So those are the saponins that really lead to a leaky gut because of how they affect the health of the cells that line the gut, and the saponins that stimulate inflammation just based on their adjuvant properties.
Yeah, you're smarty pants.
You know, did I tell you there's like 1,200 scientific citations in my book?
It's like your citations are as long as my book.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be. I don't even know how many pages. We're going to have to do it in like 4-point font just to be able to fit them all in.
All right. You ready to move to questions?
Sure. I say with a croak.
Like, was that hesitancy?
No, that was literally my voice just croaked. That was like, I was just saying sure, but my voice did this weird. Just pretend I'm like a boy in puberty.
All right,
and my voice is just going to crack.
Froggy.
Yeah.
Questions. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Okay, so Sarah, this week, since you're sick, you want me to read the questions?
Oh, yes, please.
All right. I'm going to stumble over my words. I'm going to insult cities everywhere, but I'll do my best. I happen to know that Laura is from Ocracoke, and that's how you pronounce it, because I've actually been there before. My mom loves Ocracoke Island in North Carolina. So Laura wants to know. So Laura from Ocracoke wants to know, my son is in daycare full-time, and while I pack his lunch each day, there are guidelines that parents are required to follow. The daycare is supposed to ensure each child receives the balanced diet, and snacks are provided at the daycare. Do you have any suggestion in how to talk to our daycare provider about our wishes for him to not have any wheat or dairy at daycare?
Well, I mean, I never had the issue with daycare, so for me, the first discussions I ever had with my kids' teachers were kindergarten, because my kids, my oldest didn't go to preschool at all. And I basically just said, she's sensitive to gluten and she can't eat gluten, you know, period. Like, I didn't phrase it as, you know, my choice is that she doesn't eat wheat or dairy. I just said she can't. Don't give it to her. I never got asked for a doctor's note, but it is in her medical records that she's sensitive to gluten. And it's that diagnosis comes from my reports of what happened when we stopped eating gluten. And you know, my daughter was she's probably old enough to be totally embarrassed by the fact that I would talk about this. She was chronically constipated for most of her life, and she was actually on Miralax, like adult level doses of Miralax, for 2 years. We gave up gluten, just gluten. I mean, it wasn't even full paleo, because I've already talked about doing that transition over 6 months. We gave up gluten and she was off Miralax in a month. Like we were able to wean her off the Miralax and she was fine. And when we went grain-free, she started sleeping through the night. And she was 4 and she had never slept through the night, like on a regular basis. There had been like the occasional occasion where we'd wake up in the morning and be like, oh my gosh, we didn't get up in the middle of the night. It's a miracle. So, you know, when I mentioned those things to my pediatrician, that was like, yep, she's sensitive to gluten. And there's like, there's no debate. Like that diagnosis is based on my reports as a parent. And so if I needed a medical, a doctor's letter, it would be no problem. I would go to my doctor and say, hey, I need a letter saying that my daughter can't eat gluten. And my doctor would be like, yeah, sure. Now I realized that not all doctors are necessarily that easy to work with. And I realized that other countries don't necessarily work the same way, although I'm assuming that this would be at least similar for Canada as it is in the US. But, you know, this is, you know, most food allergies and sensitivities are the diagnosis is made based on a parent's observation of symptoms when a kid eats that food or doesn't eat that food. I mean, that's true for allergies too. My youngest is allergic to tomatoes, and we know that because the last couple times she had ketchup, she broke out into hives immediately afterward. You know, I don't need to go get her skin tested to prove that she's allergic to tomatoes, because that would just be cruel. It's quite clear that she's allergic to tomatoes. So, you know, I guess if you really feel like wheat and dairy is a choice for you and it's not a sensitivity and you really feel like you would be perjuring yourself or something if you couched it as a sensitivity, then I don't know, Stacey, if you have some better suggestions if that's the case. But this is what's worked really well for us, and I know this is sort of a standard procedure when you're talking about any kind of food sensitivity in, you know, daycare or school settings.
So I actually, I think we talked about this once before. Before Matt was a stay-at-home dad, our son Cole went to a daycare that had a subsidized food program. And the reason that they are required to make sure that the children have these guidelines is often because they're receiving a subsidy from either the city, the state, or the federal government to buy and supplement, augment the children's food so that they get a balanced diet, which means they are responsible for ensuring that they're eating these foods. What that means to a parent is that you might pay less, or your daycare provider makes a little more money because they're being subsidized by the government to make sure that this food's in place. So one of the easiest things to do is to ask if you can opt out of that program and say that you're willing to pay whatever the difference is. And it's going to be really nominal because they don't get much from the government. That's what we did. Another approach is to do what Sarah did, which is say, here's a doctor's note. But if your child hasn't shown significant symptoms prove to whatever your doctor perceives as being, you know, gluten and dairy intolerant, that's fine. It is really, really common these days, though, for parents to avoid wheat and dairy for all the reasons that we know that Laura knows about and our listeners know about. They're, you know, common allergens. And so I believe if you went to your doctor and just said, listen, you know, based on the information that I have, behaviorally, what I'm reading, this is something that I'm avoiding for my family, for, you know, to make sure that my child doesn't have problems in the future, I would like a doctor's note from you that says, you know, specifically my daughter can never, or actually it's a son, that the son can never have wheat or dairy in the daycare. And it might be that you have to substitute with rice crackers or something like that. And frankly, I just don't think it's that big of a deal. Like if at daycare they get rice crackers occasionally, and that's what you need to do to make your lifestyle work for you, as you transition out of this in a year or two or whatever, I think that it'll just naturally fade away. I just don't. I would take the easiest approach that you can possibly do.
I have nothing to add. I say as I sound like I'm like in my sick bed.
So, holy spagoli, Becca from Minneapolis has given us an epic backstory in question. I'm going to cut to the chase.
Cutting to the chase is still epic.
Yeah, it's still epic. She's got three older boys, slightly older than mine. Oh, Becca, that's so cute. You've got boys 10, 7, and 4. That's my future in a year or two. Cool. So Becca says, hello, ladies. Hello, Becca. First, thank you very much for the weekly inspiration. You're welcome. If it wasn't for you both, I'm not sure I would have the drive to take the next step to help heal my family. That's why I know if anyone can help me, it's the two of you. Well, that's very nice. You picked this question because she complimented you.
Yeah, every time.
So, my question is two-part. How do I feed all these hungry boys without living in my kitchen? That's no joke. Didn't I just talk about feeding my boys and running out of food? Did I say that earlier? Or was I just thinking that?
I don't know if you said that before we actually started or not.
Oh, okay. I'll talk about it. How do I do this and deal with the social stigma they perceive? So those are questions. Let me give you a little more story from Becca. Okay, so the first problem is at home. Mealtime is actually fine. We eat paleo meals plus rice for the boys. And while, of course, at least one boy has something to complain about, they eat pretty well. I like how positive she is about that.
Yeah, that's cool.
The trouble is snacks. Slowly, the tortilla chips and salsa, the cans of baked beans, and giant chunks of cheese, containers of hummus and yogurt have been disappearing from my grocery list, which is good, right? Right. Good job, Becca. Right. However, it means that I feel like I am forever trapped in my kitchen. I can't get out. As soon as I clean up from breakfast, someone is back in there looking for food. I chase them out, try to do some laundry, and suddenly I need to make lunch already. I fry up some burgers and sweet potatoes. They devour it, run off and play, and as soon as I'm cleaned up, they're back. And no longer can I toss them a bag of chips and salsa. I'm trying to make dip for veggies or salads, or make a pot of chili to keep for them to snack on, or deviled eggs. If I don't make snacks and just let them free range, they will simply devour all the fruit, dried and fresh, they can find, along with pistachios and cashews. There have been days that they have seriously eaten a bunch of bananas. I really think she's talking about my kids. I'm sorry. There have been days that they've eaten a bunch of bananas, container of strawberry, and bag of nectarines in one day. They are not fans of paleo baked goods. They don't like the texture. So if I try to make a batch of paleo banana bread to keep around, or some bars, those are ignored. What do? I can't spend all day frying up burgers and drumsticks, making meatballs and chili all day long. Okay. So then she also says...
Do you want to answer that question? Then we'll go on to the second question.
Sure.
Of hers.
So how about we just say, dear Becca, I totally empathize. And I would say it's normal. I mean, we're going to give you some tips and tricks, but I've never heard from even a standard American family with three boys that they have no problems keeping food in the house. Like every single person I've ever talked to that has multiple boy children, the first thing they say to me is, yep, you're going to eat you out of house and home. Like, it's just, that's how it is. And Matt tells stories about how his mom used to make, like, 3 or 4 pounds of pasta for dinner, and they would, like, fight over who would get seconds, because not everybody would get seconds, and then
Whoa.
It still wasn't enough food. Like, it just, it's crazy. Boys are hungry, they're active, their metabolism is something that makes all of us middle-aged women jealous. Am I wrong? You know, they're processing all that food most of the time. That's, I don't want to stereotype, but this is just, it's not surprising. So what we've done with our boys, and honestly, our boys are a little bit younger than yours, so I can imagine if my boys are doing it, your boys can do it, is we've empowered them to always eat a protein with something else. So we buy or make once a week the hard-boiled eggs. You can buy them at Trader Joe's or Wegmans or Whole Foods. There, you can get cage-free pre-hard-boiled eggs, or you can make them yourself. And you can make up, you know, 3 dozen in 1 hour if you want to. And then whenever they want a piece of fruit, you can say, Sure, but you need to have that with an egg, or two, or three, or four, or however many they need. We also get a lot of cured and quote-unquote processed meat from high-quality sources, like U.S. Wellness Meats. So hot dogs, meat sticks, paleo kits, Primal Packs is a new one that we really like, Epic Bar. We are empowering the boys to know that if they're going to choose something with meat, something with protein, they don't need to ask us. If it's something other than meat, then they need to come and ask us what can they have. So the really great thing is your boys aren't asking you what can I have all the time, which is also like this power struggle we found in our house. It wasn't just about feeding them, but it was also like what can they get away with and what can they kind of pressure and guilt us into letting them eat, because we know that we don't want them eating a bunch of bananas and cashews all day, which is what, frankly, I would eat if I didn't have the sense to know better. And, you know, if I was a young kid, I'd be trying to get away with it. So they know that if they're going to choose meat, they can make a hot dog themselves. They know how to do that safely by themselves. We've even taught them how to make their own, they call it a fried egg, but it's a microwaved egg. They know how to pop open an egg. Not the youngest, but the two older ones know how to crack an egg, scramble it, and put it in the microwave and push the buttons. Like, they know how to do all that stuff so that they can have some protein. Another thing that I think is really helpful is coconut milk smoothies. You can even put egg yolks in there for protein, but just that fat is really satiating, and your 10-year-old is totally capable of making a coconut milk smoothie. Freeze some bananas, you know, buy epic proportion the next time you go to the store and save half of them to get ripe and then freeze them. And then all you need to do to make a smoothie is put in some frozen bananas, some coconut milk, and then whatever else they want. So sometimes my kids will put in frozen mangoes. Sometimes they'll put in nut butters. Sometimes they'll put in cocoa powder to make like a chocolate banana smoothie. And they know how to do that by themselves. And I mean, it was a really long time of supervision, and they ask us again if there's no protein, if they can do something, and we say, okay, yeah, go ahead and do that, or I'll be in a minute to help you. But all that is really great because it empowers them to kind of take responsibility for finding food themselves. The last thing I want to say is that if they're really that hungry for snacks all the time, you might want to look into more satiating meals. I mean, as much as my boys are hungry, we try to limit, I don't want to say limit because I don't think it's ever a good idea to limit foods, but we pay attention to the fact that if the kids are constantly asking for snacks, they're either bored and we address boredom, or something isn't right with the food that we're providing and it's just not filling them enough. So I said earlier that we didn't have enough dinner because we made a recipe from a cookbook, and the cookbook said it fed 4 to 6, and there's 5 of us and 3 of them are children, so it should feed our family. It was like half as much food as we needed for sure. And you know, in as soon as dinner was over, because we ran out of food and everybody was like, I want an apple, I want this, I want that. And, you know, Matt and I looked at each other and we're like, that wasn't enough food. They're still hungry. So maybe it's not that they're snacking. Maybe it's just that they're not getting big enough portions at mealtime to really satiate them for a couple of hours until the next time to eat. What did I miss, Sarah?
Sardines.
Shush. Her 4-year-old is probably not ready for sardines.
My 3.5-year-old loves them.
She's such your child, though.
She is.
You just
totally
couldn't
my child.
Have an episode go by without saying the word. It's like a drinking game for people on the podcast. Like, all right, let's see how many minutes it takes for them to say sardines.
And then a shot of kombucha.
What? Yeah, totally.
You know, I have girls, so I don't have this issue. I do kind of get the both of my girls. My oldest, because she doesn't really like food, and my youngest, just because she's at that like highly distractible age where sitting and focusing on a meal is like not not something that she can do. But I think they often don't eat enough at supper time, not because I haven't provided enough food, but just because they sort of eat until they're no longer starving, and then they want to go off and do something. And it's been really tricky for us to sort of figure out how to get them to eat more of their meal before they leave the table and you know, go off and do something. And it's been really hard for us to sort of gauge, like, okay, well, are they really full when they say they're full, or are they going to come whining for food in half an hour? And I don't have a solution for that. But you know, I do the same thing. You know, snacks need to involve some kind of protein. So kind of a lot of the same, other than adding canned fish. I mean, canned fish is a really big staple in our house, especially with my youngest. My oldest is not such a big fan. But my youngest, I mean, that's what she'd rather eat just about. I mean, she asked for sardines for breakfast this morning. I mean, what can I say? That's kind of like her favorite food. So that's, yeah, I don't really have anything brilliant to add.
I would say, you know, she mentioned that they eat nuts. Like, I don't think that nuts are the worst thing in the world. No, you know, you don't want them eating nothing but nuts all day, but,
And they can get expensive depending on, yeah, you know, where you're.
So maybe instead of pistachios and cashews, you could get walnuts, which actually has a little bit higher of an omega-3 ratio and is cheaper. That's one of the ones that we let our boys snack on more frequently. I would get them macadamia nuts, but they're too expensive and I hoard them for myself. So
yeah, I do the same thing.
Okay. So I had some feedback about specific products, but I think it goes towards her second question. So are we ready to answer that?
Yeah. Let's go on to her second question.
Okay. So her second question, as a reminder, was how do I do this and deal with the social stigma they perceive? So she says, how to deal with the social stigma. My son with Asperger's freaks out about the idea of not getting to have gluten or dairy when he is not home. And as a 10-year-old, I sure can't control what he eats when he is at school or with a friend. I know that that is a choice he needs to make, but since all he wants to eat is fruit, I know he needs to heal his body, and his gut is not in good shape. And despite the cute bento box items I bought to try to make packed lunches and snacks better, my 7-year-old told me exactly what he thought when he came home from day camp the other day. Mom, why do you pack such stupid snacks? All the other kids had Cheetos and juice boxes and stuff, and you just gave me those stupid nuts and dried apples, and they all told me my mom was dumb. I want Cheetos.
Brutal.
Totally tough. Hopefully you were able to handle that with some patience, but... So she says, ladies, help, please. School starts soon, which also puts me back to work as a part-time teacher, and I'm not sure I can keep up with all this broth simmery, mayo and ketchup making, burger frying, lunch packing, etc. My husband is on board, but he works a lot of hours, so I'm pretty much the primary food person in our house. How on earth do I do this and keep my own sanity and health and the rest of the house clean? I'm desperate. All right, so I'm going to tell her some cheats. Are we ready for some cheats? Because that's what she needs. She sounds really overwhelmed, and her kids aren't quite on board. And I'm not saying this is what we're doing today, but it is what we do sometimes, and it's certainly what we did when we were trying to get our kids on board. So I would not worry about ketchup. I would not worry about ketchup. There are at least half a dozen brands that I know of that have... that do not have high fructose corn syrup, that do not have red dye number 40, and even if it has cane sugar in it, it's less than 2 grams of sugar per serving, and that's not something that we worry about. We have started like buying and making fermented ketchup, and that's not even like a permanent full-time thing. We also have a bottle of, I think it's Whole Foods or Trader Joe's brand in our fridge, and I don't feel guilty about that. Like, if that's the worst thing my kid eats, fine. Also, mayonnaise. We've found a couple of local places that make their own mayonnaise. So as much as we like to make our own mayonnaise, it's not feasible for when the boys are packing their own lunches in the morning, which is what we encourage them to do. I just talked about empowering them to, you know, learn this stuff and do it themselves. It's difficult for Matt to be in the kitchen and make a batch of homemade mayo before they get ready for school if they want it with their food. Cole, in particular, really loves tuna salad. So we've found a couple of local brands that use sunflower seed oil, which is not great, but it's also not canola oil, and they don't have any other crazy ingredients in it, and we're okay with that. That's a decision that we're making. We feel like if that's the worst thing that he eats, then we don't have problems. So let's see, what else did she say? Yes, she says his gut needs to heal and she's the one eating fruit all day. What I would say, though, is that you've got to get him on board before you can start offering kids, especially ages 7 and 10, like broth and homemade mayonnaise and ketchup. It's going to be, it took us like 2.5 years, 3 years before our kids were excited about that stuff. And even at that, they're not taking egg drop soup to school. Like, that's something they eat for breakfast. And then when they go to school, they have normal looking lunches. So they have lunch meats. There are tons of brands available in Whole Foods and Trader Joe's that use, you know, whole ingredients without a bunch of junk in them. Prosciutto is one that almost always has just salt and pork. And you can wrap, for example, figs or dates. You can wrap prosciutto around that. And I don't know anybody who doesn't like a prosciutto wrapped date. It's just amazingly delicious. You can also try to make, you say they don't like paleo baked goods, but I wonder how they would feel if you made paleo bread and made sandwiches for them. There's also a couple of brands that you can buy if you're feeling overwhelmed and don't want to make things. I know there's paleo bread, but I'm almost positive that it contains
psyllium.
Psyllium husk. And we, Sarah and I, do not endorse that at all. So we would not recommend that you buy that. But there are coconut.
There are more and more local bakeries, like gluten-free bakeries, that are having paleo lines too. So that's something to look out for. Talk to the gluten-free bakeries near her.
Or if they're doing white rice, I know that there's gluten-free white rice bread available because that's what my boys ate in the beginning. And there's also coconut wraps, like either Pure Wraps or there's another brand now, I think it's called Paleo Wraps, that looks just like a wrap that another kid would have, but it's not made out of wheat. It doesn't taste like coconut either. My kids love those. They bake for them. You know, I think the most successful thing that you can do, though, is take your child to the store and say, what do you want to pack? And get them on board from the get-go, because you don't know what his definition of stupid snacks is. You might be surprised what he is excited to try. I was shocked when Cole told me he wanted to pack salmon salad for lunch several times a week. Like, that was his choice. He said it was his favorite. I never would have thought to pack salmon salad. We have a recipe in Eat Like a Dinosaur for black olive tapenade, and it's not just like, it sounds ridiculous to feed your kid tapenade, but honestly, that's one of his favorite things is black olives, and we find ways to put it into his lunchbox and his foods other than just whole black olives, because it's one of his favorite foods. So you can go to the store and say, all right, you know what, we're not going to buy Cheetos, and we're not going to buy juice boxes, but I can get you, you know, this cool looking water bottle that has, you know, a superhero or whatever on it, and nobody will know that it's water. And I can, you know, we can pick out snacks together and pick out things that you're comfortable with. Don't let it dominate the whole lunchbox. It doesn't even have to be every day, but allowing my children to have sweet potato chips, allowing them to have some of the gray area foods like coconut milk yogurt, there's always something that we put in the lunchbox to make it look normal. It's not the whole lunchbox. Like, we try to make sure that there's homemade foods, but it's also, I understand where he's coming from. I know when I'm at a meeting at work and they buy salad and sandwiches and the salad has croutons on it, and because I'm celiac, I can't eat it. Like, I know what it feels like to be in a social situation surrounded by your peers and how awkward it is to people have ask you questions or to feel like they're judging you. So, you know, I just think it's really important to be sensitive to the social stigma that they are creating, especially when they're going back to school in a new environment with new friends and a new classroom. You want them to have a sense of self-confidence. And if they're picking out the ingredients in their lunchboxes, and if they go and they say, you know, I would be okay with Lara bars, and I would be okay with coconut milk yogurt, and I would be okay with sweet potato chips, then you say, okay, these are the things that when you're packing your lunch in the morning, you can choose one of these things or two of these things or whatever you feel comfortable with to include in your lunchbox. And the other things need to be, you know, wholesome homemade foods from us. And see how successful that is. I've had really good success with that technique. Children love picking out their own things. They feel like they're in control. And that's the best thing that you can do, is it helps them get that sense of confidence. That way, if someone complains that their lunchbox isn't Cheetos, they can say, no, it's not, because I prefer sea snacks. And then the whole conversation is shut down because they're happy about what their lunch is. But yeah.
I do something similar with my oldest, in the sense that we did it last year before she started kindergarten. We did it again this year, where we sat down and we made a list, and we divided the list into vegetables, fruits, fats, proteins, and treats. And we made a list of all the foods. There were foods that she liked that would pack well in a lunch. I mean, so there's like, it's not just the foods she likes, but foods that she liked that would pack well, and that I could pack her in her lunches or for her snacks. And it worked really well last year. We kept the list on the fridge, and it kind of gave me this like free pass. So like, you know, raw spinach was on her list. So if I was, you know, looking in the fridge and there was some raw spinach, I would throw in a few leaves. And if she tried to sort of complain that she didn't want to have, you know, spinach for lunch, I would sort of point to the list and be like, well, this was a food that you said was okay for me to pack for you. And I'm not saying that raw spinach is necessarily, you know, where she wants to go with her kids, but just having that discussion with my daughter and sort of, you know, I basically divide it into what I see as being food groups now, you know, not, you know, grains, dairy, meat, and fruits and vegetables, but, you know, fruits and vegetables, fats and proteins. I mean, to me, that's sort of like how I divide, you know, my food, if I'm thinking about food groups now. And to sort of have that discussion with my daughter, and she would always have something from each category in her lunch. And even actually, she would always have something from the treat category in her lunch. Now, the treats are things like freeze-dried mango and, you know, Steve's Paleo Crunch bars. I mean, things that are, you know, pretty darned healthy, but just maybe slightly sweeter than, you know, what I'm sort of trying to get her to think of as the healthy food in her lunch. I used air quotes, which nobody can see, but there was air quotes around healthy foods, just for everyone's information. So, but just having that discussion about, you know, what foods do you like? And then is that a healthy choice? And is that something that I can pack? And, you know, the list compared to last year was probably close to double as many things. Like, it's just that many more things that she likes this year compared to last year. Last year, the list was fairly small and fairly limiting, and really her lunch ended up looking like mostly the same almost every day. There was a little bit of variation, but she pretty much had either grass-fed hot dog or grass-fed bologna. She always had apple. She always had carrots. And then there was sort of like a rotating fat and a rotating something green. But it was, you know, her lunches really, really looked the same every day. She was really happy with that. She's clearly my child, because I'm the kind of person who can eat the same thing every day for 3 months and not get tired of it. But just having that discussion was something that really changed the dynamic. And it wasn't me packing her lunch and forcing her to eat something. It was her, you know, us working together to find a solution. And it was her choices and her likes that sort of formed this list. There was plenty of healthy foods that I would love to pack in her. I would love to pack her hard-boiled eggs, and that would just be so easy and cheap and great. And she does not like them. So I don't put them in her lunch for her, because it's really, you know, my youngest loves them, but my oldest doesn't. So I just don't pack her hard-boiled eggs. So having that dialogue has been really, really helpful in our house, in sort of getting lunches in a place where we can all be happy with it.
While you were talking, I also thought about, I know that you pack the U.S. Wellness Meats bologna and
mm-hmm. We really like it.
in the lunches, and those are good too. Our kids, like, they have salami and bologna and stuff like that, and they're happy to have that, and we know that it's quality ingredients, and we don't worry about it as... It's not even a 20% in the 80-20 rule for us. Like, we think of that as, like, good quality protein, and I don't have to worry about it. So, when in doubt, pack bacon. I mean, who's going to – your kid shows up with bacon, paleo cookies, fruit, and, I don't know, Crunch Bar. That's too many treats, but so what? First day of school, that's what your kid packs? Everybody's going to be jealous, you know? Like, I just
think, I'm jealous, yeah.
So try to figure out the things that your kids love. I think the list is a great idea. I basically have an in-person list at the grocery store with my kids because you're more organized than me, evidently. So
that and I find grocery shopping with my kids really tough these days. So I do actually try and do grocery shopping on my own. Okay. So, just as a I admit, if I can take one or the other, grocery shopping's great. But I do both. It's not working right now. Used to work. It doesn't work now.
How about three boys? You want to change those all to the activity level
thanks.
Of my children and throw a Wessie into the mix?
No, thank you.
It's cool. You just put a cape on Wes and tell him to be Batman, and he, like, stays with you and protects you the whole time.
He's adorable.
Today he told me he was Iron Man. We're trying to potty train him, which is embarrassing because he's, like, almost 3.5. And for the love of Pete, he refuses to be naked. This is completely off topic, but I think everybody wants to hear about my children. So
clearly,
I'm a mother and I like talking about my children. But he's got this thing about not wanting to be naked. I've never seen it. My other boys, they are, like, swinging in the wind. They are happy to get some breeze on their boys. They are just, like, showing it to everybody. Wesley is the most modest kid I've ever seen in my life. If you're changing his diaper and you take too long, he yells at you to put the diaper back on. Like, he loves to be covered. And so potty training has been really difficult because the way that we potty trained our boys before is we just, like, took their pants off and spent a weekend with them, like, pointing them to the potty. And when your kid refuses to take their clothes off, you can't do that. So, we've been working with him on potty training, and today he told me he was Iron Man, and it was a really good opportunity to be like, well, Iron Man has to go potty because he doesn't have a diaper. He's wearing an Iron Man suit, and if he goes potty, it's in his robot, and it's like, it blew his mind to think about it. Like, oh yeah, Iron Man does have to go potty. And I was like, so if you're Iron Man, you better go sit on the potty. And he's like, okay. Cause he's like that into the character that I can be like, if you're Iron Man.
He is. He's like a method actor.
Yeah, he really is. So, like, it totally convinced him. Go sit on the potty. So hopefully he switches to Iron Man more often instead of Batman. I don't know what to do. What am I doing with these three kids? You guys, I can't believe you trust me to answer questions. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know. I'm still figuring it out myself. Oh, at least the first two are potty trained.
My oldest was 3.5, older than 3.5 when we finally got her potty trained.
He's just not interested. That's another thing, is like, I refuse to push a kid who's, like, completely not interested into it, because then it's nothing but frustration and accidents. And, you know, it's like, if he's not ready, whatever, you know. It's, anyway, so we have one more question, but I'm going to call it a bonus segment instead. Sarah, how about we do a little paleo parenting?
It has been too long since we've done a paleo parenting segment.
And I'm not calling my potty talk paleo parenting.
That's paleo survival.
Yeah.
Parenting survival? Yeah.
Cool. Well, now you get to hear this cool song and segment intro that you never get to hear. Enjoy! Segment this week, paleo parenting. Sometimes we use this segment just to talk about general stuff, but today we have a question from Ridgefield, New Jersey, and I apologize in advance. It is a really cool name. I think that it's Orchidia or Quidia. Sarah thought that it was like orchid, which once I heard that, I was like, oh, that's cool, but it's spelled different than that. So if I completely butchered it, I apologize, but nonetheless, we think it's cool.
Yeah,
she's
definitely
got two boys. It's a theme among show listeners. And she...
Yeah, I'm like the odd man out today.
Yep. We're taking over, but your girls are going to have the pick of the litter, evidently.
That's true.
I know mine will be at the top of the list.
Of course.
Okay, so... Lady from Ridgefield wants to know, what is the proper way to introduce kids to the paleo diet? I took away all the cereals and pastas, but they still eat school lunches for now. I just started introducing the diet this week, but was afraid to take everything at once. Now, 4 days after, they are complaining about the restrictions of candy and hot dogs and can't wait to be grown up so they can move out and eat Chinese food every day. From their mouths. Help. Okay, so... I'm going to jump in and say that until this year, my kids didn't even know what they were eating was called paleo. We called it gluten-free, casein-free. We called it gluten-free, dairy-free. We called it gluten-free. We called it no processed foods. We said, is that healthy? We said, eat like a dinosaur. Is it vegetables or meat? And these things really helped them. The problem with the paleo diet is that it's being referenced as a diet. And, you know, one of the things Jonathan Baylor said on the podcast that I did with him was like, we don't call vegetarianism a diet. We don't call veganism a diet. Those are lifestyle choices. And paleo is a lifestyle choice. It's not a diet. And I don't want anyone to think that my kids are on a diet. So just first and foremost, I think one of the things that I would take away when you're first introducing the idea is figure out a way to, introduce this in a way that helps the children understand that this is to help them grow and be strong. This is better for their bodies. You know, we got a little background and there are some health issues here that are trying to be resolved with eating this way. So explain that, you know, share Eat Like a Dinosaur with them. Go through that initial story where it talks about eating different foods can be hard sometimes, but it makes us feel better, it makes us strong, and that's why we're doing it. And then I would say, you know, create some mimic foods for a while. And this is where Sarah and I are on the, you know, trouble side of the paleo.
The trouble side?
I don't know. You know,
for the opposite of the whole 30 side?
Yes. We're of the belief that when you are converting a family, that you cannot just say, we're doing a whole 30 today and be on board. Like, I just don't think that's setting your children up for success. And you don't want it to be a power struggle. You don't want it to be something that you have to worry about. And if you create this dichotomy of, I threw away your cereal and now you need to eat eggs and veggies for breakfast, it's not just about, well, what was wrong with my cereal and why did you feed me this my whole 11 years and now you're telling me it's wrong. It's also like, well, I'll show you, because that's what happens at that age with kids. Even a 2-year-old will have a power struggle with you. So I think it's really about education and teaching them, talking through, you know, what you did before and why you perceived it to be correct. But you found some research and information and you're going to try this as a family. You set a time for yourselves. You know, we did 14 sleeps. We said, we're going to try this for 14 sleeps and we're going to see how we feel at the end. You know, if it's 30 days for you, if it's, you know, 10 days for you, whatever it is, say you're going to do it for that amount of time. And tell your kids, we'll see how we feel on the other side of that time. And, you know, we'll reevaluate at that time. That way they don't feel like they're giving up whatever forever. And the other thing is, I would allow yourselves to kind of wean off of some of these foods. Spaghetti squash pasta and zucchini noodles are great, but that's not something my children would have eaten the first week that we were paleo. So I think, you know, we reduced the amount of pasta meals we included, but we ate quinoa and corn pasta in the beginning. Blasphemy, I know. But like, I just felt like those first few months, or rice pasta or whatever it is, you allow yourself to find ways to transition your children and not freak them out. Nowadays, there's even more that I was unaware of before, like rice pasta, sweet potato pasta, kelp noodles, all kinds of stuff that, you know, don't, in my opinion, if you tell your kids, like, all of this is gone, and now what you have is paleo, is, you know, you're setting yourself up for this disappointment on their end, and it will be a struggle. That said, like, we have paleo hot dogs. U.S. Wellness Meats sells paleo hot dogs. So if they want hot dogs, you can get them. There are a lot of products and baked good recipes. There's even, like, Russ at the Domestic Man has an amazing grain-free pizza recipe. You know, there are a ton of paleo cookbooks and bloggers like Sarah and I who are offering transition foods and recipes, muffins, cookies, breads, biscuits, all these kinds of things that kids are used to eating. And this is why we create those foods. We don't even eat those foods anymore. But we're creating the recipes for families just like this who are transitioning, and we don't want the kids to refuse to participate when they're at school. We want it to be something that they can feel happy about, something that tastes good, something that doesn't make them feel deprived, something that helps their bodies heal, helps their bodies grow and be strong, but still sets them up for success socially and emotionally. And these are things that we really need to consider with children who are, you know, in that developmental stage. They don't have a sense of self yet, and they really need us to help them, you know, establish that sense of confidence and to find ways that it can be successful for them. And grain-free granola for cereal and sweet potato pasta and U.S. Wellness Meats hot dogs can go a really long way. And that's not to say that it's forever. But if that's what your kids are really asking for, there are ways to appease them in a much healthier way.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would add anything else except to say, you know, I've talked about it many times, but we transitioned really slowly. When I first started talking about the whole family going paleo, my husband, even though he doesn't even remember this now, and he will say that he was supportive right from the very, very beginning, he was not. And at the very beginning, he made this little thing about how he was not going to give up his toast for breakfast, and he wasn't going to give up his cereal, and the only way he would do paleo was if I could make foods that tasted like that. And boy, that sounds really like jerky. He wasn't quite that jerky about it, but you know, he was not really on board. And it took me experimenting with recipes. The reason why I have such amazing bread recipes on my site is because I needed those for my family. I have not made bread for probably 3 or 4 months. Granted, my kids have been asking for it, and I've sort of said, you know, yeah, we haven't had that for a while. I should make that again. But, you know, for a long time, you know, homemade bread so that we could have almond butter and honey sandwiches was a staple in our house so that we could get through that transition. And I never really worried about it. Like, to me, that was, you know, it was a way for all three of them to feel like they were eating normal foods. You know, it was just made with, you know, almonds and eggs and, you know, like, you know, I just kind of felt like given the alternatives, given what this is replacing for them, like, I'm not going to worry about this. This is, you know, no, it's not as good as if they were eating, you know, liver and beets, but like, you know, the bar can't start that high. And we still don't talk about this as a paleo diet with my kids. We talk about, with my oldest, we talk about gluten. And she knows that we don't eat very much dairy. She actually, I let her have some grass-fed yogurt today, and she had like one bite and was like, I don't like it. She asked for the coconut milk yogurt. Like, it was, you know, it's we just don't eat it. And she knows that it's really bad for her little sister. For the 3.5-year-old, we talk about foods that hurt her tummy. And she got really upset when we were traveling and we were at a house where our host's kids were eating hot dogs with bread. And she said, which out of the mouth of a 3.5-year-old, it was absolutely heartbreaking. She said something to the effect of, it's not fair. I can't eat those foods. I wish they didn't hurt my tummy so that I could eat them. And I felt really bad for her because, like, she really, really can't. Some kids can. Some grown-ups can handle those foods as treats or as their 20%, and they're fine. And my family does. That's not the case. But you know, it's been for me. It was better to tackle it as a slow transition. We never tackled it as a challenge. We never tackled it as a, we're going to do it for this many days. We just started doing it. My kids ate, you know, Chex cereal, like the rice Chex that are gluten-free, for like 2 months before we started working on getting eggs in for breakfast because they used to not like eggs. And we did it in baby steps. Now, granted, you know, it's the dialogue that you have with younger kids is a little bit different than what you have with older kids, you know, especially a kid who's like old enough to be, you know, sourcing their own food at school or at play dates. But, you know, I still think that talking with your kids about the reasons why and you know, thinking about them when you're cooking and thinking about what will be palatable for them so that they won't miss their old food so much. And they can see, I think this is the biggest thing for many people to wrap their head around, not just kids, but you look at what you're giving up and it can feel like just that, like you're giving something up, like you're going to be deprived. And so I think for a lot of people, not just kids, but you know, grownups too, that when you're transitioning, it can be a real comfort to see that food can still taste good and that you can still have treats and that you can still, you know, have a birthday cake on your birthday that's going to be, you know, paleo friendly because it's grain free and dairy free and made with, you know, good fats and, you know, an unrefined sugar. So, you know, I think that showing kids that food is still going to taste good is one of the most powerful ways that you can sort of get them on board.
Yes, agreed. The only other thing that I thought of when you were talking, and I've talked about this before, but I'll just mention it again, is that I actually allowed Cole to buy lunch at school when he started back at school, only it was not every day. So, and frankly, I would have done that if we were paleo or not, just because I don't think that the school lunch is healthy even by a non-paleo standard, and it can be really expensive if you buy every day. What I told him was in the beginning he could buy twice a week and he would look at the calendar that came out and we would, you know, choose the days that he was going to buy. So we knew the days that he needed to pack a lunch. This was in kindergarten. So Matt was still helping him pack his lunches in the morning. And, then after a month or two, so that would have been after we'd been paleo about 6 months, we told him we wanted him to choose one day a week that he would be able to buy lunch. And we didn't get any argument or pushback. Like, he knew that that was junk. He knew that it wasn't healthy. And then he always chose Pizza Fridays as the day that he would buy his one day a week lunch. And that's what he chose as his own human being. And frankly, we felt like we were doing such good stuff at home that it wasn't that big of a deal for us. Even though it was gluten and dairy, his body was still doing pretty well with being able to control itself. And we hadn't, I don't think, learned about how great his health could be, too. Like, he still didn't have asthma. You know, he was doing fine. So then he, after maybe a couple of weeks of just once a week, that was the only meal that he had that wasn't paleo, he knew immediately. He was able to make the connection between I don't feel good and I ate this food. And he'd come home from school, he'd have a tummy ache and, you know, a lot of the stuff that Sarah talked about earlier. And we had that dialogue with him and we said, well, what do you think you did today that would have made you feel sick? We didn't even make it about food. We just said, what do you think could have happened that made you feel sick? And he would say, oh, I bought pizza today at school. And we would say, well, do you think that was a healthy choice? Do you think that your body likes pizza? And he would say, no, it's definitely making me sick. And it was only a couple of weeks. And then one Friday, he said to Matt, you know what? I would like you to help me pack my lunch today. I don't want to buy lunch anymore. And that was it. He never, ever has asked to buy lunch again. And he knows he can. He makes decisions when we go out to restaurants that make me cringe sometimes. But he knows when he's in school, he wants to feel his best. He doesn't want to have a tummy ache. He doesn't want to have a headache. He wants to be in control of his body. And I just think of all places, school is, you know, breakfast and school are like the most important meals for their bodies when they're trying to learn and sit still for that long. So I am really proud of him, but I also, you know, for someone who's like 4 days into paleo, I think it's totally normal for her kids to feel that way. And it's okay to find a middle ground with them.
Yep.
Also, FYI, if you really miss Chinese food, Gather and Beyond Bacon have Chinese food recipes that are really good. Actually, Paleo Indulgences has a good Chinese recipe. And we order out Thai food a lot. You can ask them, but there's often no soy sauce in a lot of the rice noodle dishes. So that was our like special reward, that and breakfast Fridays. We often make breakfast for dinner on Fridays. Instead, we used to get pizza takeout every single Friday night, so we had to like change it up a little bit. We get Peruvian chicken, Thai food, and breakfast for dinner on Fridays, and the kids are just as excited about that stuff as they were about pizza. So, all right, I'm going to call that a show.
Yeah, I don't think my voice is going to do much more.
Your voice survived, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm at that funny stage where I'm starting to feel better, but I sound worse. So I don't know. I apologize for the frogginess. I promise it's really me. That's what I had to do Science with Sarah, just to prove it was really me.
Cool. Well, everyone, have a great 2 weeks. Well, maybe you might hear from us just to say hi next week, but I might actually try to get Monica to do the voiceover to like say this is why she picked that segment. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool.
So if I can talk her into doing that, you guys might meet Monica, our little awesome minion superhero mama, next week on the show, which means you won't hear from us, but you will hear lots from us on the bonus show with lots of segments. So you might need a little Monica to break it up. So
one request that I had by email, because we are about to remind people how much we like iTunes reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I had a request of some more explicit instructions on exactly how to leave an iTunes review, because it's not, depending on what device you're doing it from, it's not necessarily the most intuitive thing. So can I like totally put you on the spot and get you to give some more explicit instructions for iTunes reviews?
So anyone who's listening to a podcast should download onto their smartphone, if you're using a smartphone or whatever electronic, what do they call those? Any transportable device. Now I feel like I'm like 80 years old. Anyway, whatever device you're using that has an iTunes app on it, there's also a podcast app. And so if you go into the podcast app, the first thing you should do is subscribe to the show. This allows you to get early access to all of our releases. iTunes does this thing where they limit when a show goes live for people. So they actually hold the show once we post it for up to 24 hours. But if you're a subscriber, you actually get instant access. So if you open the podcast app, you are going to immediately be opened to a screen that says My Podcast. And the Paleo View might already be there if you've downloaded it recently, or you might have to do a search and add it. But once you have your Paleo View there, you go into settings, and there's a little button there that says subscription on or off. So everybody should be subscribed now to the Paleo View if you're using an iPhone, and I highly recommend you do. So once you have the Paleo View there, if you go to, I think you have to go to, yeah, you have to go to the store, and there's a little tab that says review once you're in the store. So when you go to the store, it's going to pull up whatever the last thing you looked for. There's a little search magnifying glass in the bottom right-hand corner. You just search for Paleo View. You pull up the Paleo View podcast. on the middle of the screen, it says details, reviews, or related. Details is what allows you to choose a specific show if you were going to the store. Obviously, these are free, so you're just basically downloading, but iTunes still calls it a store. And then there's a little tab next to it that says reviews, and when you click that button, it allows you to read all the reviews on it, and there's also a really big button in the middle of the screen that says write a review. And that's how I know to do it. I do know that it's actually easier and more available when you're doing it in iTunes directly, because you don't have to switch between the store, you don't have to open a separate app and do all that kind of stuff, because the app actually considers itself a library and a store, so it switches between the two. The library is what's on your phone directly, and then when you go to the store, you're actually in iTunes cloud. So that's the difference between the switching back and forth. But when you're doing it in iTunes directly, it's a little more intuitive, and you just kind of click on the show, the Paleo View, and then you should have the option to subscribe, to download an individual episode, to review. All that stuff is kind of big in that. So I'm assuming the problems that people are having are related to smartphones and not on the computer directly, because I know a lot of people access them that way. Hopefully that was helpful. If it's not, email.
I was following along.
Okay.
With my phone.
Good.
It seemed to work.
Okay.
But then I didn't write a review because I thought that would be kind of cheeky.
If it's not helpful, email us through the contact form on our website for the podcast, and we can try to get more explicit instructions. Like, tell us what your specific problem is, because the problem that we get is we're often like, I can't figure out how to do a review, and I don't know where to start. You know, like, I'm not an iTunes genius, so I'm just fumbling along like everybody else. But Matt's a little more savvy, so if you have a specific question, excuse me, I'm sure he or Monica would be able to help.
So I think that's a wrap.
Cool.
That was a fun one.
It feels good to be back in the groove a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, not that I kind of liked the soapboxy of the philosophy series, but it's kind of nice to break it up with, you know, old school. We can call it now, though, right? After 51 episodes?
For sure. Well, I think it's totally awesome that this is actually the same topic as our first show. So
I thought that was kind of cool. Kind of a fun revisit.
So maybe if you like the show, what would be fascinating is if you went back right now and listened to the first show, because Sarah and I were so awkward compared to this. It should be a riot to listen to that show after you listen to this one.
Oh my gosh. Don't go do that. It would be so embarrassing.
And then email us and tell us how awesome it was to compare the two.
How much we've grown in a year.
Yes. Cool. So, yes, please visit iTunes and do a review. Now that you know how to do that, we heart you for it. And all that jazz. I almost did like jazz hands.
I was so tempted to do jazz hands. That's so funny. I was sitting there going, no, don't do jazz hands. No one can see you. It's not even cool if you do jazz hands right now.
No, we're not cool.
That's so funny.
We're just dorks.
Yep.
People are so done with us.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
So I guess
stay good next time. Episode 53, we'll talk to you directly again.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Matthew's been vastly underestimating the amount of food that this family eats lately. Like, he cooks out of a recipe book, and I'm like, but you know that that's not going to be enough food, so you have to double the recipe. Somehow when he makes it himself, he doesn't have this problem, but this is not the first time lately that I've like finished all the food and the kids are like, we're still hungry. And I'm like, I'm still hungry too. It's legit.
Oh no, I'm out of Kleenex. How did that happen? That's so funny with the jazz hands.
All that jazz.